Well, if you don't get sick, it's all right. If after eating, you don't go into hibernation for. Well, eat as much as you can digest. Generally, new devotee in our society means a young devotee and with a good digestive power. So eat as much as you can digest. But don't eat so that, you know, if you eat and get sick, it doesn't matter what, you know, Prabhupada said, you'll still be sick. Well, I'm sick, but Prabhupada said I should get sick. But that's not what Prabhupada said. The idea is that new devotees are encouraged to eat so that they feel satisfied. Then they'll be less likely to go outside to get their satisfaction. Yes.
But the new devotees are especially struggling with lust. But when they eat up to the neck, doesn't that push on their belly and then onto their genitals and only increase their lust? I don't understand the philosophy that the devotees should satisfy their bhakta lust with eating a lot, because I think it has the adverse effect.
Well, there has to be some kind of, you know, understanding. What's that?
Moderation.
Yeah, but if you tell a new devotee that, you know, be moderate, so in one sense, they'll say, all right, I'll be moderate. But for them, usually moderate means that they should eat a lot. For them, because if they join when they're 80 years old, it may be different. But when they join when they're 20 years old, and their life hasn't been completely that of piety before, you know, to suddenly now you're only supposed to have 8 chickpeas and and 3 chapatis and 2 teaspoons of sabji and, you know, half a glass of dal, and you're supposed to be satisfied. But my senses are on fire. Anyhow, moderation, Prabhu, that's all right. I remember when I was the temple president, I had a few devotees in my temple, 1971 in Houston, and there was one devotee whose his wife was there, and it was a time for fasting. It was a fast day, Kadasi or something. So I told everyone they had a fast, and he said, oh, I'm really hungry. I said, no, you got to fast. His wife had left, so he was struggling trying to figure out what to do, to go with his wife or stay in the temple. So on that day when he had a fast, suddenly he disappeared. So he fasted half a day, but he didn't stay in Krishna consciousness. In other words, it has to be some balance. It's a new devotee, so we don't want to encourage the idea that, you know, you're in 6 months, you know, you have 180 days of feasting. No, the idea is just to eat for you till you're satisfied. That's all. We don't encourage, oh, you're satisfied. Eat more. Prabhupada said up to your neck. Well, if I eat up to my neck, I'm going to get sick. It's Prabhupada's instruction, Prabhu, you know. I had to be a little aware of what Prabhupada wanted. He didn't want devotees to get sick. Now, two, eating soon after a full meal. Does anyone ever do that? After you had a full meal, like an hour afterwards, someone comes up and say, I saved some sweet rice for you, Prabhu. Has that ever happened to anyone? And he says, well, you know, it's maha, right? what is it? Well, it's 3 glasses. Well, it's maha, it's the Lord's mercy. So eating right after a meal, a full meal, also will cause indigestion. Too much water or no water during a meal?
Does it mean a drink, or can it be also water within the food?
Yeah, dal. Yeah, dal, it's also liquid things. Drinking very chilled water during a meal, or indeed any time. Drinking very cold water. So Sometimes I've seen devotees eat ice cubes. Does anyone here eat ice cubes sometimes? Yeah. So that definitely lowers the digestive fire. Are you pitta by constitution? Do you have a mostly pitta constitution?
Yep.
So pitta people like to eat. They won't be so much harmed by eating ice cubes. Other people will. Eating when constipated. You know, oh, I'm constipated. I better take some laxative or else I can't eat. So eating when constipated. Eating during the wrong time of the day, either too early or too late. I'm sure we all have that experience. You know, thinking, well, having a big meal at night and waking up the next day. And during the whole morning program, meditating on the last night's meal. That's if you attend the morning program. Eating too much heavy food or too little light food. So heavy food is like milk is heavy. Of course, fried things are heavy. What else is heavy? Sweet things. Yeah. Grains are heavy. What's that? Yeah. Or too little light food. Yeah, salad is light. I guess the idea I'm not going to overeat. I used to do that when I was young. I once went to Dallas, and when I was in charge here, and when I first got there, they were serving this porridge, heavenly porridge, typical ISKCON diet, in the morning, which was more or less solid cooked oats. And as soon as it was just like a heavy weight, and since I was a new devotee, that I was an older devotee, I was in the movement for maybe 3 years. But still, we're eating like a new devotee. And after the meal, my first inspiration I had was to go to sleep. But we go in hurry now, because in those days, a typical day meant, 6 hours of hurry now, at least, or 8 hours of hurry now. Therefore, I'd go out on hurry now, and I spent 2 hours trying to wake up. It was very unpleasant, especially since we didn't have such inspirational kirtan leaders, Hare Nami, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. clang, 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 bang, 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 Hare Krishna. 3 hours left. So every day was, So then I decided to cut down on my diet, and I found out, wow, I'm more awake. So I thought the less I eat, the better things will be. So every day I cut down on my eating more and more, until, I was looking at my food, I can only eat half as much today, Look around, wow, these people are all in Maya. They're all in gratifying their senses. They're going to suffer like anything for. So day after day after day, I got thinner and thinner and thinner. And my whole meditation was, how little can I eat today? Cut down one more chickpea. But two chickpeas, that's not enough. No, I don't. And then Krishna sent some people to get on my case. You're eating too little. You're disappearing. So also, under-eating is not good either. Drinking fruit juice or eating fruit with a meal. Drinking fruit juice or eating this idea that juice is healthy. Therefore, because it's healthy, I can take as much of it as I want. First of all, juice is generally not healthy at all, especially when you get in a carton. It's probably one of the most unhealthy things we can take.
Well, concentrated.
What's that? For any way you get it?
No, from a concept, when it's first cooked and then they add water, then you have this artificial juice.
Well, even the, what other kind of juice do you take?
Carbon.
It's just unhealthy. It's completely in the mode of ignorance. They didn't prepare it yesterday and put it in the carton, or even 3 hours. You're getting it after sometimes months, if not years. So how can, you know, it's in the mode of ignorance, first of all. Second is that, you know, it's either fermented to some degree or else they add formaldehyde or some kind of chemical to it. And they usually don't prepare, I'm sure they don't prepare it with the most choice grapes. Just the most select fruit, the apples that were perfectly, you know, they'd probably throw everything, the worms, the pits, everything into the... You know, a worm or two adds a little taste. Now that, you know, the people making the juice, they only have their clients at heart. They serve to please. No, they're in serving just to make money. It doesn't matter what they put into the juice as long as people think it's all right. Therefore, you don't know what's in the juice. It's any kind of chemical in it. It's rotten. It's old. So how can it be healthy? Can anyone support the fact that drinking juice out of a carton is healthy? It may taste all right because of all the sugar they add. Just like these soft drinks, like 7-Up. Does anyone know how many tablespoons of sugar they add? 10. Yeah, and one, say a glass this much of 7-Up, they have 10 tablespoons of white sugar. So can you imagine taking 10 tablespoons of white sugar and then adding water to it and drinking it? Would anyone do that? What to speak of 20 tablespoons? I'm a little thirsty, I think. 20 tablespoons of sugar. Just like Coca-Cola, they've done experiments where they put overnight teeth. You know, if someone's tooth falls out, or they put it in Coca-Cola overnight, you can try the experiment, and the next day there's no tooth. It dissolves. Of course, first put it under your pillow and collect your... Get the donation, then try it. Therefore, drinking fruit juice, of course, fresh fruit juice is not bad, but it's quite concentrated.
Why is it bad during a meal?
With a meal, because you won't be able to digest the fruit juice. Because fruit has a different process of digestion. It's a bad food combination. We went over rasa a lot, but there's also virya, vipak. Virya means on the stomach level, whether it helps increase the digestion and decreases it. And vipak means on the cellular level, what kind of digestion goes on. So there are certain types of foods, when they individually they may be good, but when they combine together, they inhibit the digestion of each other. So fruit, which, you know, takes a certain amount of time to be digested and needs a certain type of gastric juice to digest it, very little, will ferment in the stomach when it's combined with other things which take much longer to digest and necessitate completely different digestive juices. So when they combine, the fruit stays in the stomach, ferments, and gets only partially digested. That's also true for things like yogurt and milk. Does anyone take yogurt and milk in the morning here? Yes. Say you're taking cornflakes and you want to take yogurt too. So you add milk to the cornflakes and you take yogurt separately. So the milk will inhibit, and the yogurt will inhibit it. They have opposite digestive qualities. Or milk and orange juice. So when you take, they'll both counteract each other. The digestion that's necessary for milk is opposite of that of orange juice. But I think we'll have to stop here. And tomorrow, we'll go more into the ritual. We'll go over the rest of the list, sum up the process, ask for more questions, and go a little bit more into the routine, different daily routines, which were, and something about specific food items. If anyone needs any more of these Xeroxes, they're up here. Being a good Ayurvedic doctor means you have to be just like a good cook. Did we miss half of it? Is this being recorded now?
Somehow.
Oh, let's do that. Yes.
What's
that?
NASA.
NASA. We haven't. Let's just follow the order that we're going in. I haven't gotten up to it yet.
Oh, sorry.
So the next one is enema, which is vasti. So enema or vasti is specifically for vata disturbances. Vata accumulates in the colon, and by application, properly applying the oil massage and the the oil and the sweating, then vata will move towards the site of location of accumulation, which is the colon. And then it can be eliminated through the therapy of Vasti or cleansing enemas. Mother Nandina, you look bewildered. What's that? basically, if you're, say you ate too much. Did you ever eat too much? So, you can stop. Did you ever vomit after you ate too much? Ever have the feeling that you wanted to vomit after you ate too much? Did you ever vomit? Oh, well, no problem. Anyhow, but you can imagine that if someone ate too much and they vomited, then they would most of their discomfort would go away. Isn't that right? So similarly, in the body, after eating too much, you accumulate kapha and all, you know, fat and all toxins, the pesticides, the insecticides, and all the poisons that we eat. They accumulate in different parts of the body. So to get rid of them, well, first of all, generally what's done is palliation, is somatotherapy, to start minimizing them. All these toxins in the body, and to loosen them and to separate them from the other tissues of the body. So once they're separated and a little loosened, then what the next thing you do, if the patient is strong enough, you apply purification. So the purification, the first part is called Purva Karma. You want to further liquefy all the toxins and get them moving. So to do that, the strategy you use is by applying oil and massaging the oil in the body, which kind of gives them the liquid to start moving, and then you move them along by steam, like a steam engine. And then after they move, where you're moving them is towards their site where they accumulate. So kapha accumulates in the stomach, pitta accumulates in the small intestine, and vata accumulates in the colon. In order to eliminate them, you have these different types of things that you do. For kapha, you have therapeutic vomiting. And for pitta, you have purgation therapy, where you take a purgative at night and it cleanses out the whole small and large intestine. And for vata, you have enema, cleansing enema. And for other types of diseases, you have nasal application, like for headaches, things that accumulate in the head. And also for impure blood, you have bloodletting. So these are the, and then after this, there's another therapy. Get the Sanskrit name. Uttara Karma, follow-up practices in order to balance again the doshas and ignite agni, etc., etc. So there's a whole follow-up to this program. There's a previous, there's a preparation program, there's the program, and then there is the balancing program again. So this is the general strategy for purification. Everyone understand it now? Application of steam. Oil.
Oil
applications, right. Yes.
So Maharaj, with these oil applications, the toxins go, like you said, for example, to the stomach, or they go out through the skin?
No, not necessarily. The reason for applying all the oil and massaging into the body is that, because as we went over, there are six stages of disease. So at the stage of overflow and then manifestation and diversification, then the doshas, which are actually substances, they migrate, they go around all the body, and they finally find a site of location. And also the am, the poisons, the toxins, they also follow along, and they get, you know, like for arthritis, they get stuck in some joint and replaces the synovial fluid. So in order to get these toxins moving out of their site of location, then the oil, first you have preliminary processes that helps reduce the the toxins and loosen them from their site of location. Then you start applying oil, really further loosens them. Because oil goes through the skin. Mm-hmm. And now they're loose and the doshas are mobile because oily oil, and then to really start moving them to the site where they can be eliminated, then use steam therapy also. So then the oil and the steam, they're moving these toxins and the doshas to the site where they're accumulating. They go back to where they came from. And then you apply these therapies in order to eliminate them. Yes?
Massaging means all parts of the body or some particular...
Well, generally they apply to all sorts of parts of the body, but it depends. Like, for instance, they have Narayan Tila oil or Maha Narayan Tila oil. So sometimes it's applied to very specific parts of the body. But the common practice, unless there's a very specific disease, like arthritis or something, is that they apply it to the whole body. These are just introduction. As I was trying to explain, that this is just reduction therapy. Next we're going to summarize the brihana or tonification therapy. But this is a general strategy that they use, but it can be applied in all different varieties according to the disease, according to the age of the patient, according to the season. So each one of these, vomiting, has its ideal time of being applied, mostly in spring. When it heats up, when the temperature gets warmer and kapha becomes uklista, which means manifest, when kapha gets easily agitated, then they usually apply, that's the best time to apply vomiting. Similarly, after the sun rises in the early morning, then also it's the best time. So they know, and also after when the moon's full. So they know when kapha is most likely to move. Excuse me, 1 second. An experienced Ayurvedic doctor, he knows when's the best time to eliminate kapha, when it's most likely to be able to be removed from the body. And then they perform these things at that particular time. They know what kind of purgative to use, exactly what proportion. And they measure it. For instance, the amount of vomit that comes out, the nurse is supposed to measure it. So they know whether it was successful or not. If they got the right amount, then they know it was successful. It's, in other words, it's a complete science. It's a whole science, and it takes a lot of experience to be able to apply it properly. To know exactly when to administer and what proportion, what's the reaction of the patient, and they have a whole science about the negative reactions and what to do in case there's some counterindications or they have some So a very experienced doctor, he knows exactly how to apply the therapy and what if something goes wrong and what to expect out of it and what the symptoms are. How long to apply it, etc. Yes.
It seems like most of the doctors, which we know, are very doctors in Vrindavan. They don't do this. They just do medicine. So they just keep
they don't treat you. They're just doing one small part, palliation therapy. You know, herbs to strengthen digestion, herbs to eliminate toxins. So this is, if the disease is not very strong, if it's not, then it may not be necessary to apply the whole panchakarma. Panchakarma can be applied for different reasons. One is the general, it can be applied and regularly to make sure that toxins don't accumulate within the system and therefore the possibility of becoming sick is decreased. There may be different reasons. Here, the reduction therapy is generally indicated when the person's overweight, accumulation of toxins, aggravated doshas, in the acute stage of disease when the attack is strong, to eliminate deep-seated toxins as part of disease prevention and an internal cleansing program. If there's actually a doctor or a clinic where they actually have facilities and experienced doctors who can apply, who know the whole reduction therapy, then you're much more likely to get the full treatment, the proper treatment. Not that everyone necessarily needs panchakarma, but in general, it is recommended for everyone, you know, like once a year or regularly, going to eliminate toxins. But then again, it depends upon what your constitution is. You know, which panchakarma to apply. You require an experienced, knowledgeable doctor. But it seems that their facilities are limited or their knowledge is limited, and therefore they only have a very, very small part, they apply only a very small part of the Ayurvedic science. Is that clear? Yes.
What's the enema?
Enema means to into your colon, your large intestine, to put some kind of fluids or different things. To eliminate feces from the large intestine by application of stool from the large intestine by putting in water and other types of oil or whatever. Yes.
Steam.
Steam. Steam. That's my English. Stream. Yes, steam. Usually they put you in a box, and they put in a box, and your head's outside the box, and then they, because it's not good to get your head, they have what is it called, saunas. Yeah, but saunas generally aren't that good for people because your head gets too hot. But then they usually have a box where they put you in. They heat up herbs in the box, and the steam is in the box, and you sweat. It's really sweating therapy. Sweating just draws some of the toxins, but it also moves the doshas and the toxins towards the place where they can be eliminated. It's a whole science. Every part of it, you know, from what exercise, how much sun exposure, to exactly what kind of purgative or enema to apply. It takes a lot of experience and a lot of knowledge. But it's all based upon vata, pitta, and kapha. Their symptoms, for instance, wherever there's pain, then generally there's vata disturbed. Where there's ever inflammation, then it's probably caused by pitta or fever. And whenever there's pus, then it's probably caused by kapha. So knowing the symptoms of each one of the different doshas, then you know what's being disturbed, what's out of balance, and then you can apply the appropriate therapy. So the next part is tonification, which is brihama, brimana, brimana. is called connotation. Pre-mana. So this is indicated for persons who are underweight, debile or debility, tissue weakness, chronic disease, in convalescence, after reduction methods have been used. And its idea is it works at building up inadequate energy or lack of substance in the body that may bring the disease about. The general rule is first to reduce and then to tonify. First get rid of the unwanted doshas, get rid of the toxins, and then you can build up in a with better food, better consciousness, etc. Replace it with something superior. For instance, in tonification, then generally after tonification or rejuvenation therapy, which is the higher form of tonification, then the person may just take things like milk. Sweet food is generally considered in the mode of goodness, most sweet things like milk. And so the person goes on a milk diet or a milk, mostly he drinks milk or takes pure sattvic herbs like Gota Kola in order to build up the dhatus again, but with purer substances. Now there's two different major strategies how to apply these, tonification, reduction. The general first strategy for dealing with any kind of illness is first one, removal of the cause. Second, purification. Third, is balance the doshas. Fourth, ignite Agni. And fifth is rejuvenation. This is when it's disease is not so strong, the patient is strong. The patient's strong and the disease is not so strong. Then this is the general strategy. Whatever is causing the disease, you try to get rid of. You eliminate. A person's overeating, you just get them to eat a regulated, balanced diet. Or, as we went over, you stop the cause, then we went over the purification process, reduction process. Generally, first you want to eliminate the unwanted or toxins in the body somehow or another. Because if you're trying to get rid of the doshas, if the or the toxins that are clogging up the scrotrus, the channels by which all the substances in the body flow, which the doshas flow in and all the different substances of the body flow in. So if is blocking the channel, then even if you apply some therapy, it won't work. Just like, for instance, if you're trying to clear out a sink, first thing you do is have to unstop it. Because if you just put in water into the sink to unclog it, and it's not, or to clean out the sink, it's not going to work. If the is clogging up the sink, then the result is just the water will overflow out of the sink. So first you got to have to unclog it. So the first strategy usually is to get rid of and then to get rid of the doshas. So that's part of the purification strategy. And then the next thing is that after you've gotten rid of the and the doshas, then you want to balance the doshas in the body. Because unless the doshas are balanced, then you can't get the proper fire digestion going. So the next thing is to balance the doshas. And this thing is to utilize to balance the doshas. Different things that you can eat, or different things you can do. And then you ignite Agni, fire of digestion. And after Agni, the fire of digestion is even, is steady, then you take the different substances for rejuvenation. And this is quite a big subject, you know, what things you use for rejuvenation. Some of them are like amla, or milk, or ghee, and there's a whole science of how to rejuvenate. Now, on the other hand, if the disease is strong and the patient is weak, sometimes you do the opposite. Sometimes you start with rejuvenation, for instance, in cancer, or something like what is consumption? Tuberculosis. So, if the patient's weak, by the time you apply this therapy, he'd die. He doesn't have the strength to go through the therapy, purification and removing the cause, etc. So, first rejuvenation first. Preserve life. And then balancing the doshas. To strengthen the patient. And to weaken the disease. And then Panchakarma. Purify the system. And then removal of the cause. Cause could be overeating, could be an emotional cause. For instance, cancer or some other immune deficient diseases are generally caused by emotional factors predominantly. Or one can use a combination of the strategies. In other words, it's just logical common sense that you have to, if you have toxins in the body, you have to eliminate them. And you have to rebuild your fire of digestion so you can replace the toxins with proper tissues. And then you have to eat the proper food, and you have to be able to digest and assimilate it. So this is all part of that. So this says that if it's not possible to first eliminate the toxins and the unwanted and the doshas, then at least give some purification, some rejuvenation first to strengthen the patient and to preserve the life. And then after that, when the person's stronger, then you can try and balance in the doshas. Because I'm not going into the details here because we don't have the time. But just to give you an idea of some of the, in this book there is an example of one person, this book called Prakruti. He tells about a doctor named Chaitanyananda, and he was more or less a yogi, and he used to cure people of very serious diseases. The way he'd do it is that the person would come to his ashram, and he'd greet them very happily, you know, very warmly, and greet them, and the person would be lured into a sense of security. And then Chaitanyananda would go into the forest and pick different herbs. that would induce vomiting and purgation. And he would administer these herbs to them. And then for up to 3 hours, they'd be throwing up, vomiting, and passing stool. And then after that, then he'd serve them khichdi, rice and dal mixed together with certain basmas, metallic ashes, in just the right proportion to his disease. And this way, for sometimes up to a month, he would administer this therapy. And that even persons with very serious diseases, like the first stage of cancer, would be cured by it. So although he wasn't, you know, a professional Ayurvedic doctor, but it's the same thing. He'd remove the cause. He'd provide them a very, you know, sattvic environment. Of course, this is the opposite. He'd remove the cause. He would purify the system. And then he'd give them something to he'd balance the doshas. And he'd rejuvenate them. And after they're thoroughly cleansed and rejuvenated, their disease would go away. In other words, the science of Ayurveda is actually a very systematic way of treating disease. The only thing you need is a doctor who knows how to do it. Yes?
Yes, and this is my question. If you don't know how to find an Ayurvedic doctor and also cannot say what then to do, you have only this 5 days.
What's that?
You only have this 5 days of studying what you could do by ourselves.
Well, it is. If you have no money, that's a real problem. In the sense that in our magazine, how many devotees have seen this magazine? How many have never seen it before? Never seen it. What temple do you... What's that? Oh. What temple do you come from? Have you ever seen this magazine?
No.
Yeah. Yes, you do. Yeah. Have you? What temple do you come from? No. I mean the monastery in the back.
No, we don't have
what temple do you come from?
We don't have a temple.
Oh. Hamburg. Anyhow, I brought some of these for a small donation. You can get one. And in here we have one of our articles this time. It is by one Mataji. Oh, we got the wrong magazine. Oh, well, this is one magazine, but we have another one. I meant the other one, the recent one. Number 3. So we'll have the Xerox. Who wanted some copy? We have our latest magazine, which you can subscribe. If you get this one, then you can subscribe to our latest one. It has a listing of Ayurvedic places in South India where you can go to. What's that?
I don't know. The problem is.
Yeah, the problem is that we can't really recommend so many Ayurvedic places in the West because they don't know about that. But there are places in India where they still follow, where there are qualified Ayurvedic doctors, and they follow the system. But in any case, even if you can't follow Ayurveda, in general, at least you find out if you can't digest your food, the first thing you should do is fast. First, you're reduced. Reduce or try to eliminate in some way the toxins and the doshas, and then you can rejuvenate with pure food and water and air and herbs. That way, try to rejuvenate the body. So at least you can get a general idea of what the treatment should be. But we can't pull Ayurvedic doctors out of a hat. That we can't do. It takes a long time to actually be trained. So those who want after class, can come up and maybe you can get one for it.
About this fasting, I hear sometimes when I say to devotees, well, yeah, I hear it's good to fast if you can't digest or don't take, then they say, well, can't fast.
They can't fast.
No, can't fast for a day or 2 days, it's too much.
Well, you can fast on water, you can fast on fruit juice, you can fast on milk. Depends. There's different types of fast. So if someone knows the science of fasting, then he can apply the right fasting. If you don't know the science, you just tell someone to fast. But it's not like that. There's a whole science according to what the disease is. Yes.
Is it Krishna's
instruction
or is it human invention?
Krishna created it. Dhanvantari. Incarnation of Krishna delivered it. The Vedas come from Krishna. They're part of his breathing. Yes.